Good morning.
Morning.
How blessed are we with the musicians who lead our church in worship? How blessed to have somebody with the talent of Spencha. The national attention that she's enjoyed. She's sung for the president at the White House. And she just calls us up one day and says, "Can I come worship with you guys?" And we're like, "Well, you're going to have to do an audition." And such a great heart, such a wonderful spirit. We're so blessed. It's good to see all of you guys. Hey, here's what I know. All of you know people. You have friends. You have relatives. You have neighbors. You have coworkers. You have classmates. You even have strangers in your life that you act like you know because you see them a lot and you don't really know their name, but you just sort of, you know, at the grocery store, at restaurants you frequent. We all know people. And here's the deal. Everybody that we know, they have different opinions. They have different perspectives. They have different ideas, different lifestyles, and they have different beliefs. And for some of them, those beliefs are deeply held. They're spiritual beliefs. They're religious beliefs that they've built their entire life on. And for many of our friends and the people that we know, their beliefs are very different than ours as Christ followers. And Jesus, the one we follow, he's asked us to love our neighbor. Even when our neighbor believes things that we don't and live lives very different than ours. And I've concluded that the best way for us as Christians to love our neighbor is to really understand what they believe and respect what they believe. Because in understanding their beliefs and respecting their beliefs, then we open the door for conversation and discussion and discovery and exploration of different ideas. And when we have that kind of relationship with the people that we know about such sensitive topics like beliefs, then we're given an opportunity to share with them about our faith in Jesus. Whereas if we took a different posture and we didn't try to understand and we didn't respect, that door would never be opened. So next Sunday, we're going to begin a new series of messages here entitled Understanding Your Friend's Faith. It's going to be a five-week series. Next week, I'm just going to do an introduction to understanding a little bit about other people's beliefs and how we relate to that. And then Matt Snellings and I, we're going to share the series, and we're going to look at four of the most popular faiths that we encounter in our city, our neighborhood, in our world. We're going to look at the faith of Islam. We're going to look at the faith of Buddhist. We're going to look at the faith of Mormons. And we're going to look at the faith of atheist, because that is a faith. And so I hope that you'll join us. I think this series is going to be incredibly enlightening. But we're going to learn as a church, how do we love our neighbor who believes differently than we do? And hopefully win ourselves the rapport and the credibility in an audience to be able to talk with them about our faith in Jesus. So that'll start next Sunday. Today, we're going to conclude the series we've been working on, How to Be a Wise Guy. It's a study of the book of Proverbs. 2 years ago, some good friends of mine invited me to join them for a trip of a lifetime. 4 days backpacking in the Rocky Mountains outside of Aspen, Colorado. And it was on one of the most iconic hiking trails in the continental U.S. It's called the Maroon Bells Four Pass Loop. It's a 26-mile circle over which you will pass, ascend and descend four mountain passes at about 12,500 feet above sea level. Just by point of reference, we're currently at 650 feet above sea level here in San Antonio. I was so excited. I'd always wanted to do something like this. I'd done some backpacking. I'd never done it on this scale. This particular hike is rated strenuous, so I'd never done anything quite this complex, but I was just so excited. And I have to tell you three things about myself. First of all, I really love adventure. I love doing things I've never done before. I love doing things that I never thought I'd ever do before. I love doing things that challenge me, push me outside of my comfort zone. I actually like doing things that are hard and difficult and scary and uncomfortable. And I don't make more of this than it is, but it's kind of a spiritual thing for me. I have a concern personally about sort of the suburban bubble that I live in and the comfort and convenience of our lifestyle typically. And so I like to get outside of my comfort zone and do things that are really, really difficult because I think it sort of does something for the human spirit that's important to me. That's why I do Tough Mudders, and that's why I do triathlons, and that's why I jump at the chance to go on a four-day backpacking trip to the Colorado Rocky Mountains. The second thing you need to know about me is I'm a research geek. Whenever I get interested in something, I love to learn everything I can possibly learn about that particular pursuit. So I read books, I watch hundreds of YouTube videos, I will listen to podcasts. If I find somebody who's done this thing that I want to do, even if they're a complete stranger, I'll ask them if I can take them to lunch or to dinner. I'll buy if they'll answer my million and one questions. I love to figure out everything I can about this thing. And the third thing that you need to know about me, and this isn't unique to me, I think most men are like this, is I'm a bit of a gear junkie, all right? I love gear and gadgets. And so when I start getting into things, then I figure out what gear I need to be really good at it or to be efficient at it or that you'll need for it to be a effective experience. And then I start accumulating gear. And my wife will confirm this usually with the roll of her eyes. I was so excited. This was several months before the trip. We started planning the trip. We coordinated. We met together almost weekly to figure out details of the trip. We trained for the trip the best that you can at 650 feet above sea level. We'd pack our packs with weight and we'd go out to Enchanted Rock and we'd just go up and down, up and down, up and down the rock, just trying to build some endurance for the trip. It's so exciting. So in the process of my research of figuring out, you know, how to do this really well, you start listening to experts, people who've done this sort of thing for years, and they have lots of great advice. And one of the most important topics that experts will talk about is they'll talk about the importance of pack weight. And the objective is to make sure that your backpack is as light as possible. You don't want to take anything that you don't absolutely need because then you have to carry that up and down 12,500 foot mountain passes for 4 days. I thought that was good advice, but there's this really amazing thing that happens is that when you go and start buying gear, and the best gear is light, it's only like 2 ounces. And it's only 4 ounces. It's only like 6.5 ounces. And you buy it separately over months and you think, well, how heavy is 4 ounces? 2 ounces, I won't even know it's in the bag. 6 ounces, anybody can carry 6 ounces anywhere. But there's this thing they tell you is that ounces add up, or every ounce counts. And so ounces eventually become pounds. And if you're not careful, your pack can become very, very heavy. And I'm just saying I might have ignored the advice because I wasn't going to leave all my really cool gear that I just spent lots and lots of money on. I wasn't going to leave it at home because I might need it. So the day of the trip comes around. My friends, they were making a family vacation out of this, so they went up a week early. They took my gear with them so I wouldn't have to bring it up in an airplane and lose it or have something happen to it. I fly in the day before we go to the trail. So I fly into Aspen. We have dinner together. We go through our gear. We pack our bags for an early morning departure. And the very next morning at about 8:30, we're at the trailhead. They've had a week. I just got there. The first mile or so of the trail is pretty pedestrian. It's not a steep climb. It's a wide trail. It's well used because there's a famous lake about a mile up the trail. A lot of day hikers go up there for a visit. So we're not very far up the trail, first thing in the morning, and I am sucking wind. I'm like, I can't breathe. And I'm trying to listen to see if the guys I'm hiking with are breathing as heavy as I am, and they don't seem to be. And I'm like, okay, just chill, just relax, you're okay. You just flew in yesterday, you haven't acclimated to the altitude, you'll be fine, just keep hiking. A little bit further up the trail, not only am I not able to breathe, I'm starting to think, I wonder if they feel like their pack is as heavy as my pack feels. Because this thing, and I had it all cinched down, I had it packed properly, but I'm like, man, this is heavy. But you don't say like anything like that to a group of guys, because you'll take no end of grief for being the one whining about how heavy your backpack is. So we hike all day. After the lake, the trail gets harder, it gets steeper, it's muddy from some rains that had happened, it's less traveled, it's a harder hike. We hike to about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, all day, just hiking. And I'm under the impression there's a mountain on my right, and we have to get around that mountain to get over the pass to get to our campsite. So all day, we're hiking, and I'm thinking we're making progress up the pass. The path turns, again, late afternoon, and then reality hits. And I'm looking at a 1,300-foot granite wall that we still have to get over in order to get to camp. And I'm looking at these switchbacks going up, and I see these little tiny, and those are hikers. And then if I looked really closely, there were these little tiny shadows at the very top of the pass against the vivid blue sky, and I realized, oh, I have to get there before I can get to camp. So we sat down on these logs. We were getting some things to eat, getting some things to drink, water. And one of my buddies comes over and he sits next to me and he says, you okay? I'm like, yeah, why? He says, well, you're just a little bit less chatty than you typically are. I said, well, I think the altitude, I'm really kind of feeling the altitude. And he goes, yeah, we probably should have brought you in a few days earlier to adjust. And I said, it's all right, I'll be okay. Are you sure you're okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. He goes, you don't look okay. And I said, well, I wasn't expecting this. I said, I'm just be honest with you, I've never done it on this scale before. So I just thought we were going over the pass, that we had made our way there, but we still have to get over that. He goes, yeah, probably take us about an hour and a half to get to the top. But you'll be fine, just take your time. And I said, okay, well, don't wait on me, I'll meet you at the top. Folks, I'm not lying. For the next hour and a half, it was three steps forward, stop and rest. Three steps forward, stop and rest. Three steps forward, lean on your poles, stop and rest. About halfway up, I kind of stumbled on a rock. My backpack got out over the trail, and I had to catch myself. And I looked down, and I realized that if I go over off of this switchback with my backpack, I'll be just like a bowling ball. I'll go all the way to the bottom, and I probably won't end up in one piece. And so now I got really quiet, and I'm really zoned in. And finally, I get to the top. And I can remember as if it was yesterday, two impressions. First impression was, this is the most absolutely spectacular and brilliant thing I've ever seen in my life. It was gorgeous. Snow-capped mountains for as far as I could see, some 14ers sticking up above the 12s and 13ers. This vivid blue aspen sky and just a sea of forest, green, lush for miles. And I was taken. The second thought that I had at the top of the mountain was, every ounce counts. Ounces really do add up. But there wasn't anything I could do at that point. It's like, Paul, you're just going to have to cowboy up, and you're going to have to carry your stuff and just do what you need to do. About an hour and a half later, we're down off the pass, we're in camp, we got dinner going, a tent set up, get this little fire burning to kind of just make smoke to keep the bugs away. And folks, I'm in something that would be described as heaven. And suddenly I started to sort of get my bearings again, and I said to myself, tomorrow will be a better day. Little did I know that tomorrow was going to be 4 times harder than day one. And little did I know that on day two, I would experience one of the most humbling situations of my entire life. I still cringe about it to this day, and still had hope that that story would never come down out of the mountains. But because I want to be a wise person, I'm going to tell you that story myself today. And if you want to hear it, you have to wait till the end of the message. So we're studying the book of Proverbs. It's found in the middle of your Old Testament, ancient piece of literature that captures these wise observations of life. Proverbs is a book of advice. It's God trying to give you and I some advice, a collection of observations about the way that life works, and it's intended to help us to live wisely. At the heart of the book of Proverbs, there's these two themes, foolishness and wisdom. And the fact of the matter is that you can take a wise path through life or you can take the foolish path, but you have to understand the choice is yours. It's nobody else's fault. It's nobody else's responsibility. All of us make the choice about what kind of path we're going to travel in the course of our life. In the first week of the series, we talked about the principle of the path, and that is this, that the direction of our life, our current set of choices, how we're going about our life right now, our direction determines our destination. It doesn't matter about your intentions. It doesn't matter where you'd like to be or how much you'd like to be somewhere, or your wishes, your dreams, even your prayers. What determines your destination is the direction in your life currently. If you want to get somewhere, you're headed in that direction regardless of how much you'd like to be somewhere else. So we're talking about how to be a wise guy. And so in the first week of the series, here's what I wanted you to get. A wise guy, a wise woman, a wise man honors the principle of the path. They understand the principle and they live their life in relationship to it. Today, I want to talk about the single most important lesson in all of life. The single most important lesson in all of life. I'm not trying to exaggerate. I'm not trying to be melodramatic to get your interest. I am talking about what I believe the single most important lesson in all of life. And the earlier we learn it, the better. Interested? So I love the book of Proverbs. I just love the whole spirit of it. And it's like a conversation between a dad and his father, and the dad is trying to give his son, the dad's trying to give the son some advice for life. And my favorite chapter in the book, which is hard because I really love them all, but chapter 3 is amazing. And you just get this spirit. Here's this person called wisdom trying to make an appeal to the masses, to us. And so we read this in Proverbs chapter 3. My son, do not forget my teaching. This is wisdom making her appeal. Do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablets of your heart. Make them a part of you so you will find favor and a good reputation in the sight of God and a good reputation and favor in the sight of others. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Don't, please, son, don't think you know it all. Don't think for a second that you have it all figured out. In fact, I want you to have a deep and profound respect for the Lord and turn away from things that are evil. It will be healing to your body and it will refresh your bones. It'll be a good life for you. It'll be a healthy kind of life for you. My son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord. Like when God asks you to do something and when God directs you, do not reject reject that, or don't loathe his reproof. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father corrects the son in whom he delights. How blessed is the man, how blessed is the woman who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding. For her profit, the value of wisdom to our life, is better than all the silver and gold you may ever earn. Her gain is better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels. Nothing you desire compares with her. Long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. So the author is saying, wisdom will reward you far more than any amount of money could. Please don't underestimate the value of wisdom. Her ways are pleasant ways, and her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her. And happy, happy are all who hold her fast. My son, let not my instructions vanish from your sight. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul, an adornment to your neck. Then you will walk in your ways securely. You won't have to live in fear, and your foot will not stumble. You'll have a smooth path. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden fear nor the onslaught of the wicked when it comes. For the Lord is in wisdom. He will be your confidence, and he will keep your foot from being caught. Do you see this beckoning, this yearning? Please, whatever you do, son, listen to wisdom. So what we've been doing throughout this whole study is I'm sharing some of what I've learned through repeated readings of the book of Proverbs. Because in reading the book over and over again, certain themes come to the surface and show themselves to be very important. I want to look at one of those themes today. So we see a series of verses all throughout the book. This is just a few samples of verses. A wise man, he will hear and he will increase in learning. And a man of understanding, he will acquire wise counsel. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools, they despise wisdom instruction. They don't like to learn new things. He is on the path of life, the person who heeds instruction, but the one who ignores reproof, they end up going astray. When pride comes, when we're arrogant and deceived by our own sense of self-importance, when pride comes, then comes dishonor. But with the humble comes wisdom. Proverbs 12, whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. Pretty strong language. Proverbs 12, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes. He thinks he's got it all figured out, but a wise person is one who listens to counsel. Proverbs 13, a wise son accepts his father's input, his father's correction, his father's guidance, but a scoffer, a fool, does not listen to rebuke. Poverty and shame will come to him who neglects instruction, but he who regards reproof will be honored. He who walks with the wise men will in turn be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. A fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is sensible. Whose ears listen to life-giving reproof, like advice, like correction, they will dwell among the wise, but he who neglects discipline despises himself, and he who listens to reproof acquires understanding. A rebuke goes deeper into one who has understanding than 100 blows. You could beat a fool over his head 100 times, but he's not open to learning. He who separates himself seeks his own desires. People who live alone and isolated. He quarrels against all sound wisdom. Nobody's going to tell me. A fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. Proverbs 19, listen to the counsel and accept discipline that you may be wise the rest of your life or the rest of your days. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than a person who thinks he has it all figured out. I could go on. Do you see it? Do you see the theme? If you didn't, let me just put it in these words. Fools hate to be told what to do. Fools hate to be told how to live their life. It's the characteristic of a foolish person to cross their arms and to close their mind and say, nobody's going to tell me how to live my life. The only time a fool is willing to listen to advice is when somebody's telling them what they want to hear. So we see this all through the book. Fools do not like anybody telling them what to do. And then in contrast, we see the wise person, and the wise person loves it when people help them. The wise person welcomes the input of wiser people in their life. It is a characteristic of a wise person to be open and embrace the input of others, especially others who have more experience, who've been down the road a little bit further and have gained some wisdom and perspective themselves. And when they speak, a wise person goes, please tell me all that you know about this thing called life because I want to learn it. It's the great contrast of the book of Proverbs. The fool does not want anybody telling them what to do. The wise person says, please, I welcome your input. So what we see throughout the book is this great contrast between arrogance and humility. The fool who does not want to hear is characterized by this arrogant spirit. Nobody's smarter than me. And then the wise person just has this wonderful, gracious estimation of themselves, and they realize, I don't know it all. I don't have it all figured out. But other people have things that I've never learned that they've learned and I could benefit from it. So all through the book is this contrast between arrogance and humility. And they have these like characteristics. So in the characters that we meet in the book and the things that we learn. So this arrogance is kind of described as people who are loud and boisterous and cavalier. They just sort of do whatever they want. They don't care about the consequences. They're opinionated. They live for the immediate. They have no anticipation of the future. They just live for right now, what feels good, what I want to do right now. They're reckless with the choices that make. They're incredibly stubborn. They're hard-headed. And then in contrast, what we see about the wise person in the book of Proverbs is they generally go about quiet. That doesn't mean a wallflower. That doesn't mean shy necessarily. It just means that they just don't make a big to-do about themselves. They're careful with the choices they make. They're cautious, again, not afraid of living life, but they just anticipate what could happen. They're very future conscious in the sense that they plan for tomorrow, whereas the fool, they don't plan for tomorrow. They're very prepared. They're very steady. They're very cooperative. They're very open. This is the great contrast of the book. And so if we look at the arrogance of the fool, we see words like this. They're arrogant. They're stubborn. They're hard-headed. They're opinionated. And oftentimes they're a bully. This is the foolish person. So let's talk about that. Can we be really candid? Can we? Yeah, because wise people are open to advice. Good. So I'm not making this up. You're going to think I'm making this up. I'm not. In the book, there's this woman, her name is Wisdom, and there's this woman named Folly. They make their appeal. Here, come follow my way of life. And there's two people in the book that they make their appeal to. One of them is what they call the young man. So both Wisdom and Folly, they cry out, they call out, hey, young man, come follow me. The other person that we meet in the book is an old man. And what we see in the book is that the young man makes certain choices, and then later in life he ends up as an old man in the backwash of the choices or in the reward of the choices. Does that make sense? So in the book, he talks about teenagers and seniors. And what we see in the book is that the choices that we make when we're young and experienced in life end up having a profound influence on what kind of people we become when we're old. And so if you meet an arrogant and foolish and stubborn and opinionated teenager and he never does anything about it, guess what? He just grows up to be a grouchy and ornery and difficult to get along with senior. He's just a fool, but now he's 70. But if a young man makes wise choices and is open to advice and he learns the lessons that are offered him, then he grows up and he becomes this gracious and wonderful and kind and compassionate and cooperative senior. Did you follow that? So here's the thing that the book is wanting us to understand is that getting older is not necessarily the same thing as growing up. Because you can meet lots of 60 and 70 and 80-year-olds who are just stubborn and opinionated teenagers. And that a kick in the shorts. You see, that's the value of the book of Proverbs. So here's the fascinating. I love this stuff. That's serious. I love what we're about to discover. Because we think, well, that book is in the Bible, that's ancient. But it's God's wisdom, and so it's timeless, it's eternal. And you look at the book, and when you start reading it over and over again, and you start seeing the amazing patterns in the book, you go, oh my word, that's so relevant to this day. And so what we see in the book is that there's seven tests. There's seven tests. There's seven tests in the book to demonstrate what kind of person are you going to be. There's seven tests to say how you choose in these seven situations will determine if you're going to be a wise man or a foolish man, a wise woman or a foolish woman. Do you want to know what the tests are? Folks, I'm telling you, this is worth gold right here. If you want to put a little money in the offering plate just to say thanks, we'd appreciate that. But I'm telling you, this is worth the price of admission right here. There's seven tests in the book of Proverbs to say, you want to know if you're going to be wise or foolish? Watch how you respond to these seven situations. You ready? No, seriously, you ready? You say that, but as soon as I start down this list, you're going to think, oh, man, preacher, you've gone from preaching to meddling now. But I'm telling you, these are in the book. You ready? The first test. Yep. You want to know if you're a wise man or a foolish man? Let me see what you do with alcohol. Because the foolish person says, nobody's going to tell me what I can and cannot drink. God says, okay, I'm just trying to see if you're wise or you're foolish. Because there's some things about the way that alcohol works. And I can show you generation after generation of it happening. And the choice that a person makes about what they're going to do with that one thing often determines the entire course of their life. We're going to come back and visit that one here in a minute. You want to know what the second one is? Sex. It's all through the book. You're like, sex all through the book? Okay, suddenly I want to read it. No, see, it's awesome. It's awesome. He says, you want to know if you're going to be a wise person or a foolish person? What are you going to do with God's design and intentionality for sexual intimacy? If you're going to take the attitude, nobody's going to tell me who I can sleep with or how many people I can sleep with or what kind of sex I can. Nobody's going to tell me how to live my life. God says, okay, I just wanted to see you're going to be a wise person or a foolish person. Because I know things, God says, I know things about sexual intimacy that you can't even begin to understand. And if you're foolish and you think I can do what I want, what you need to understand is that there's a future to what you do with sex. And it's possible that you can enjoy all the sex that you want, explore, discover, enjoy whatever you want. But what you need to understand is that sex is inherently a spiritual thing, and it has to do with your soul. And it's possible that you can experience some great sex because you ignore the advice of people and then wake up someday and you can't connect with the partner that you're married to in true sexual intimacy because of all the scars and the guilt and the shame and the fear of your past. But the fool says, that's the future. I don't have to worry about that. Like, this is happening right now, and I'm in. You still excited about this list? Want to see the next one? This is huge. This is huge. Authority. Wise people and foolish people respond to authority differently. We're talking about parents. We're talking about teachers. We're talking about coaches. We're talking about policemen. We're talking about judges. How you respond to people who've been granted authority to provide leadership in society will determine if you're going to be a wise person or a foolish person. If you say, nobody's going to tell me how fast I can drive my car, and nobody's going to tell me what I can cheat on and what I can do, and nobody's going to tell me when I have to be there or be there. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. God says, okay, I just wanted to see what kind of person you're going to be. Next one, work, like labor, like diligent, hard work that you do in order to provide for the people that you're responsible for. If you're going to be lazy and say, I'm not going to go into work, or I'm not going to hold this job, or I'm going to see what I can get away with and see if somebody else can kind of buy my way for me, God says, okay, I just wanted to see if you're going to be wise or fool. Next one, what you do with money. Nobody's going to tell me how to spend. Nobody's going to tell me about the danger of credit card. I got it all under control. Thanks, preacher. I appreciate your passion, but I'm going to do this my way. I'm going to get myself in these kinds of debt. I'm going to sign these kinds of contracts. I'm going to do this kind of business. And pretty soon, your money is haunting your life. Those are really good. But you want to know what the last one is? No, seriously, do you? Because this is a kick in the shorts right here. Watch this. What you do with your mouth. Two fronts. What you eat and what you put in your body, and what words you say and how you use them. God says, I'm just trying to decide if you're going to be a wise person or a foolish person. Because if your life is going to be fascinated by spreading rumor, gossip, telling lies, you're showing yourself to be a fool. If you want to cram everything that you can possibly eat because you like it and it tastes good down your pie hole, look, I just wanted to see if you're wise or foolish. Because what you need to understand is that all of them have a future. They all have implications. It's pretty scary, isn't it? That's the book of Proverbs written thousands of years ago. And every one of those tests, that's six of them. We'll come to the seventh one here in a minute. So here's the deal. You take all of these things, and God is saying, fools refuse to take advice from other people about how this goes. Fools fail to learn from the mistakes of others. Fools don't pay attention to the future. Like, I don't care about what the future might hold. I'm just going to enjoy the sex right now with this person that's right here, right now. And I'm not going to understand. I'm not going to appreciate the implications. And they don't pay attention. They ignore the possible consequences. They don't care about the impact of their behavior on other people. And they refuse to choose wisdom over foolishness. Folks, what we need to understand is that we're not simply wired this way because of a certain personality. That some people have more of a personality to be reckless and careless, and other people are more careful and cautious. What we need to understand is this is about depravity, not personality. This is about the nature of sin. And over and over and over again in the book of Proverbs, we read this, fools rush headlong into the present without any regard for the future. I'm just going to live for today. I'm not going to save my money for the future. I know everyone's telling me I should, but I want that car and I want that house and I want that lifestyle. And I'm not going to save for today because I don't anticipate the future. I'm going to have sex right now with this person, regardless of the situation. I'm not married to them. This is wrong. But I want this right now, and I'm not going to worry about the implications for the future. I'm going to drink this right now because I can handle it. Everybody else is drinking without any implications for the future. Does this make sense? So I want you to see something. Book of Proverbs. It says, wine is a mocker and beer a brawler. Whoever is led astray by them is not wise. That's interesting, the word to use. Wine is a mocker. You know what that means? It means this, that wine will eventually make fun of you. Wine will eventually step back and go, oh my God, look what he just said. Look at how she's behaving. Look at the mess they've gotten themselves into now. They're like, yes, I won. It's a mocker. And whoever is led astray is not wise. Well, beer is a brawler. You know what this means? This means beer picks fights. It picks fights. It puts you in aggressive situations where you end up doing stupid stuff. And it complicates your life. And we say, I got it all under control, preacher. Wine is a mocker. You say, I got it under control. I drink a little bit in the evening just to kind of take the edge off and put the day's work behind me. And then it becomes two nights a week. And then it's three nights a week. And then it's four nights a week. And now it's more and it's harder stuff. And now there's more and more situations happening where you'd say and do really stupid things at parties and social events. And it embarrasses your spouse. And it makes your kids feel uncomfortable. And now there's more and more stories told about you doing something that scares the kids because you were drunk and you said some things and you did some things that they had never seen you do before. And wine is a mocker. You say, I got it all under control. And now you're doing it so often and so much that your spouse is scared. And they've tried to bring it up and they've tried to say, hey, maybe not anymore. Hey, maybe we should stop. Hey, maybe we should maybe get some help. But you're a fool. And so you say, woman, don't tell me how to live my life. Don't tell me what I'm going to do when I come home from work. This is my life. I'll drink what I want. I'll drink how much I want. You just mind your own business, and you've just shown that you're a fool. You see how that works? And now all the people in the neighborhood who run around with you at the club or in other places, they're like, did you see him the other night? Oh my God, that was embarrassing. I don't know how she does that. Because wine is a mocker. See, folks, there's this beautiful thing that happens in the book of Proverbs that if you read it over and over and over again, the truth, the deep and profound truths start percolating up from the bottom. And then you realize, oh, wait a second, this isn't just about wine and beer. There's other things that I can get into that make fun of me, that pick fights with me. You see, marijuana is a mocker. And premarital sex is a mocker. And pornography is a mocker. And gambling is a mocker. And credit card debt is a mocker. And gluttony is a mocker. And cheating of any kind, cheating on your spouse, cheating on a test, it's a mocker. Anger is a mocker. Laziness is a mocker. Arrogance is a mocker. Because it all comes back to somebody saying, nobody's going to tell me how to live my life. The single most important lesson to learn in life is this: always welcome the help of people wiser than you. A wise guy always knows he doesn't know it all. He welcomes the advice, the instruction, and the guidance and the direction of others who are smarter than him. This is the heart of humility. And how you choose sets the entire course of your life. So the book of Proverbs pleads with us. Wisdom shouts in the streets. She lifts her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her saying, how long will the naive ones be this way? Will they love being simple-minded? And scoffers, how long will they delight themselves in scoffing? And fools, how long will they hate knowledge? Please turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. Because I called and you refused. I stretched out my hand, but you didn't pay attention. You neglected all my counsel and you did not want my reproof. And I'm just going to laugh at your calamity because there's nothing I can do if you don't listen. I will mock when your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. Then they will call on me, but I'm not going to be able to answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. Why? Because they hated knowledge and they did not choose a deep and profound respect for the Lord. They would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof, so they shall eat the fruit of their own ways and be satisfied with their own devices. For the waywardness of the naive, it will kill them. And the complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. Isn't that what you want? Isn't that what you want for your kids? Your marriage? It's the wise way. So there's a seventh test. The seventh test is this: what you do with God. The book of Psalms, which is before the book of Proverbs, it says this: the fool says in his heart, there's no God. I don't have to worry about that. That's a crutch. That's a mystery. That's a myth. The fool says there is no God. But the fact of the matter is that the wisdom of the scriptures talks very clearly about God, and God has talked very clearly. And he talks about life after death, and he talks about eternity. And he talks about two experiences. There are people who will spend eternity in heaven in the presence of God, and there are people who will spend eternity separated from God in a place called hell, and it's hellish. You want to know something about hell? There isn't a single person who is in hell or will be in hell because they never went to church. There isn't anybody there because they didn't go to church. There isn't anybody in hell because they weren't good enough. They just didn't get it all together. There's nobody in hell because they were a really bad person. There's only one reason why every single person who inhabits hell or will inhabit hell is there. Every person who inhabits hell is there for one reason. You want to know what it is? Arrogance. Nobody's going to tell me how to live my life. Not even God. A wise person is open to advice. I could have never imagined how hard that second day was going to be. We left camp early in the morning. We had to get down off the mountain that we had spent the previous day climbing. We spent the late part of morning in a valley sandwiched between two enormous mountains, foliage, forest, beautiful mountain stream. And then at about 1 o'clock, we had to start up the next mountain. This time, there wasn't no gradual pedestrian climb. This was all day. Unfortunately, some things were happening to me. Altitude sickness. One of the things that happens at altitude is you lose your appetite. So I wasn't eating enough, so now I had a caloric deficit. And I wasn't drinking enough, so I was dehydrated. I was so sick. I was so exhausted. I just had to keep climbing. Late that afternoon, I look up the trail, and one of my buddies is coming back toward me. And I notice that he's not wearing a backpack. So my first thought was, oh, good, he's in camp. The second thought was, that's not going to happen. Because I knew what he was up to. He met me on the trail. He was above me. I was below him. He was like a shadow against the sky. And he said, nothing, but I knew what he was thinking. And I said, you're not carrying my backpack. And he said, I am carrying your backpack. And I said, no, you're not carrying my backpack. And he said, I am carrying your backpack. I can tell you're in bad shape. I'm going to carry your backpack into camp. I said, no. See, the story is not going to come down out of these mountains that I needed somebody to help me with my backpack. I'm not lying. This conversation and an iteration of it went on probably 24 times. Yes, no, yes, no. At one point, it may have included some profanity because I know those words. I said, you're not carrying my backpack. And he says, I am. He says, Paul, we're only a few hundred yards from camp. Just let me take your backpack for you. And I said, no, no. He said, Paul, it's going to be a really cold night out here on this rock if you don't give me your backpack. You know what the crazy thing is? Deep down inside of me, I wanted nothing more than for someone to take that backpack. I was so sick. But it was my arrogance and my pride and that whole macho thing that nobody was going to carry my backpack. I eventually realized that he was not going to be deterred. He was going to be a turd, but he wasn't going to be deterred. And I eventually unbuckled and I set my pack on the ground, and he came up and he, like you're supposed to, he grabbed it by the shoulder strap and he got it up on his knee and then he threw it over his shoulder. I'm not lying. The first words that came out of his mouth was, oh my God, how much stuff do you have in here? And suddenly the secret was out. And I needed somebody to carry my pack. And the reason I tell you that story to my embarrassment is because I'm just positive in a room this size, some of you are carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders. You are saddled with a pack of life that is so stinking heavy right now, and it's guilt and it's shame and it's fear and it's depression and discouragement, and you're so overwhelmed you don't know where to turn, and you're just trying to cowboy up and keep moving forward, but you're dying. And I just wanted to tell you, it doesn't have to be like that. There's people to help, and there's somebody to help. Humble yourself before the Lord, and He will lift you up. You need somebody to help carry the weight of your world for you. And I have good news. His name is Jesus. Jesus, who said, come to me, all of you who are weary and all of you who are burdened by carrying an enormous pack on your back with the weight of the world of all of the things that are going on inside of you, and I will help you carry. Whatever you do, be wise enough to ask for help. and to take it when it's offered. Because it's only a fool that crosses their arm and says, nobody's going to tell me how to live my life. For some of you in this room, the one thing that you need to do right now is to ask Jesus for his help. Because he's the only one that can carry what you're carrying. Make sense? Let's pray together. Father, we have a choice. We can be foolish or can be wise. There's no set of circumstances in our past, and there's nobody else who can make that choice for us. God, I pray that we'll come to the end of our arrogance and we'll humble ourselves enough to say, I don't have it all figured out, and I don't know all the answers, and I need some help. And on our journey on this path of life, I pray that we'll be wise enough to see you standing there, willing to help us with our pack. Help us to be wise men and women. I pray and ask in Christ's name. Amen. Hey, if there's any way that I or another one of our pastors can be of help sorting out the pack, don't hesitate to ask. All right? Guys, it'd be great. See you next Sunday. Have a great week.